Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Spirit of Life in Ibiza podcast. We're sat here today at the Torre des Molar Tower in San Miguel, which once served as a lookout to alert the island of potential pirate attacks. The tower is at the top of a cliff 95 metres above sea level, so we have a beautiful panoramic view of the Mediterranean Sea. And from this lookout point, we are able to see the crystal clear waters of Benaras, which is infamous for its stunning sunsets and hippie drumming. The reason I've chosen this location today is because my guest, Eric Passman, ex-Special Forces, had a terrifying yet life-changing episode of psychosis at Benaras only 6 weeks ago. Eric is going to be sharing a little about this experience with us shortly as we chew the fat in this beautiful location. But before introducing Eric, I should explain that we only actually met 2 days ago at Tanit Cave, literally seconds after I finished recording my first podcast. It turns out that whilst I was discussing channeling and my connection with spirit outside the cave, Eric was sat merely metres away, channeling with his own spirit guide. He was told by his guide that he needed to go to Tanit Cave, as there was someone there that he had to meet. So it seems that fate brought us together to do this podcast. Such is the magic of this beautiful island. So a very big welcome to you, Eric, and thank you for joining me at this, quite frankly, incredible location.
Yeah, well, thanks for inviting me over. This is for me, it's very special because we actually see the beach from over here, and you can see there when the mountain, when the sun hits the mountain, just below there. That's where it all started for me, that I, for the first time, well, actually consciously gave myself to something that we cannot see and touch for the first time, actually.
Well, I'm sure everyone's really looking forward to hearing that. But before we do hear that story, I actually just want to take all the listeners on a little journey into the Pirate Tower itself. I'm quite literally risking my life to bring you this podcast here. But I want you to hear the acoustics that are in this beautiful Pirate Tower. So bear with me as I'm walking down the stairs and trying not to break my neck. Here we go. So listen, can you hear the acoustics here? This is just, it's incredible. It really is such an amazing tower, and I feel very grateful to be here today. These podcasts are actually really helping me to find these beautiful locations on the island, so I'm very excited to be here today. Okay, Eric, so... Yep. To be honest, I'd love you to start. You're in the Special Forces.
Yep.
I'd love you to start by paint us a little picture about what happened there. How was that for you?
Yeah, of course, it was the best time of my life. I was living in I was living the dream. You know, I was 24 and I went to Afghanistan with a team of my own. I mean, the responsibilities they give you in the army at such a young age, it's fantastic. And I worked with great people there, because you know, in the army, in essence, you work with people that are actually willing to give their life for the person next to them, and that makes things special, you know. I mean, it's not about you, but it's about the collective thing. Although I must say that I'm not a fan of war, and I didn't like shooting at all. But for me, it was very important to be able to work with these people at this young age under these high performance circumstances. And of course, we traveled the world. You know, we went to the Middle East, to America, to Africa a couple of times. So for me, it was living the dream. But after 6 years in the Special Forces, including training and selection, I decided it was my time for a change. And I'm very happy I did it, because it brought me a lot, and a lot of friends and experiences. But yeah, it was time for change when I was done. Yeah.
Okay. And can I ask this question? Did you ever have to kill anyone?
Luckily, no.
Luckily indeed, yes, yeah. Okay. And may I ask, what made you go into the army?
Yeah, well, I wanted not to recognize it, but my father was in the army. So when I was at the age of 5, I was already walking around at the army base. And of course, it's intriguing. But I went to logistics first, because I really didn't, you know, I wasn't really into shooting and stuff and all these violent stuff. But I went into logistics because it was literally the only organization in the world where you learn how to lead. You know, the military academy is completely organized to teach young people to be a leader. And of course, it's not easy, and you know, a lot of people struggle. But for me, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a leader, to be able to serve people. So that, and I always say that, you know, the role of a leader is being supportive to a team. So I really believe in the concept of shared and serving leadership. And that's what you're able to do in the army. So that's why I went in. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so you left the army and you started working, was it at KLM?
Yeah, there were a couple of jobs in between, because I must say that the army is also a way of living. So it's pretty difficult if you get out to find your place in the world. I know a lot of friends of mine struggle with that as well. So I went to work for a private university in Holland, and I did some leadership programs there, which I loved. But the environment wasn't mine. It was, it's about theory, you know, and I also like practice a lot. So then I quit and I switched to consultancy, which I also liked because it's all about change. And change is all about people. But it was in logistics, and I felt that it was not my place. It was too narrow for me. Although, again, all due respect to people that choose for one specialization because it's very important, but it's just not me. It was too narrow. So then after consultancy, I switched to work for the KLM, and that was my first experience with a big corporate organization. And then after a half a year or so, I went into a burnout, which was not the fault of the company, but I realized that it's not my place, and it took a toll on me, you know, sitting in all these meetings and actually other people determining your agenda was very difficult for me. So I went into this burnout, which of course were the first signs of my starting transformation, but I didn't know that yet from then on.
That's very interesting. It's interesting to hear the burnout happened for you in the corporate world, but surely there must have been, from working in the army as well, there must have been a build-up from there, which maybe then just hit when you got to the corporate world, because that's a stressful environment to be in.
Well, it's funny that you say so, because that's indeed what most people think and say. So I was also tested for PTSD, because everybody thought I had PTSD, of course. But I knew I didn't have it, because, you know, we saw some bad things and we were in some bad situations. But I felt, we talked about this, you know, and it was all fine, and I didn't dream about it. And to be honest, the corporate environment, and specifically KLM, is also, you know, an environment that provides you with safety and regulated hours if you listen to it. So when I worked at KLM, I didn't work that much in hours, or, you know, I slept very well. I did my gymnastics. I ate very well. So for me, going into that burnout was actually a surprise. And of course, you start looking for excuses and you make yourself crazy, you know. Is it because of my youth? Is it about that I work too hard and so forth and so on? But in essence, all this didn't matter. It was just my starting transformation. Yeah.
Yeah, I know all about that, because I suffered burnout myself as a stockbroker, and that was absolutely the start of my transformation as well. So I'm sure you're the same, but I'm actually very grateful to it now.
Yeah.
I guess we need to get on to it. So you came to a retreat in Ibiza.
Yeah.
And I know you've said that you didn't even know what a retreat was before. And I guess, like, you know, the army is a lifestyle. It's not really a job that allows spirituality or for showing emotion or anything like that. So I guess, like, retreats and anything to do with the spiritual journey, which people talk mm-hmm. about, or mm-hmm. this kind of this level of consciousness, I guess it wouldn't have really been something that was in your energy field at that time. So what made you go to a retreat in Ibiza?
I would like to state that in the army, you know, at first sight, people might think that there is no space for emotions or spirituality, but in order to, you know, you really live together very intensely. You go on missions for 4 to 5 months, you share rooms with 9 people on a very, very, like, 10 by 5 meter cabin, so there's actually a lot of room for emotion, and you also have to cope with all these stressful situations that you can only be but yourself, you know, I mean, not your true self that I recently discovered, but there is a lot of place for emotions in the army, and people are open in my experiences. But jumping to the retreat, because that was your question, I didn't know what a retreat was. Of course, I read all these magazines and articles that people were going everywhere, you know, to do whatever they were doing. But I was attracted to ecstatic dancing, because in the army, you know, it's a lot about strength building and obstacle courses. And I was pretty fed up with that, because, I felt like I just wanted to have more joy in movement. So, you know, I didn't want to put all this stress on my body, but I just wanted to make fun while doing exercises. So the retreat was all about ecstatic dancing, and that got me there. And it was also like a holiday, so I was in this burnout for 3 months. And it was a good timing for me to go to Ibiza in this case, and to enjoy life a bit, you know. In I was thinking, is the end of my recovery phase?
But it turns out to be just the start.
Yeah, the beginning of a new life.
So that leads me to my next question. Tell me about this psychosis, as you described it. What happened? What started the psychosis that you had?
Yeah, well, I don't have any background in anything that has to do with psychosis. And of course, we call it psychosis in society. I know that it's been a very intense transformation. So from now on, if I use the word psychosis, don't mind me, but I know it hasn't been a psychosis. What actually happened, I went into this retreat, and for the first day, there were these cards, tarot cards, I think that's the right word. And there was some, these scents were being brought in. There's a smelling very, very Sali. I think it's called Sali. In Dutch, it's Sali. And then we had to do meditation. And then during the dance, they start doing some healing things by putting their hands on my heart and on my chakras. And I didn't even know what a chakra was. But I started crying, and all this energy left my body. And I felt happy, and all these emotions went through me. So it was already starting, but I just didn't know. So somebody was tricking me in this transformation, I guess. and then the old energy left me. That's what really happened. That was a major thing during the third day of the retreat, when I had the ecstatic dance and some energy left me that literally said to me, I don't need to protect you anymore because you can do it by yourself now. And from that moment on, I started doing, I think, yeah, I still have to research it, but ancient shamanic rituals somewhere in the forest during the early morning. And so I was actually thinking it was normal.
So just to clarify on that, this wasn't part of the retreat experience. You were just getting up and being guided to do these rituals, which you up until that point probably didn't even know what a ritual was.
Yeah, I didn't even know what I was doing. But yeah, it was not part of the retreat. But the guidance was very clear. It said, take this, go there. And then I can even remember that there was a cat, and the voice said, okay, what direction is the cat looking? Okay, go that way, you know? So, and I was really thinking it was all normal, and now I know it was normal.
So just to reiterate on that, you feel like the cat was guiding you to where these rituals actually were to take place?
Yeah, that's what happened, because I was staying in the hills in a finca, you know, a small farm. Of course, I didn't know where to go, but a cat was hanging around me for a few days, and it ate a snake the day before, which is a symbol of transformation, and you know. But it pointed out the way, and then I walked that, and it was a few hundred meters away from the farm, and it was this old well, I think, a place very deep in the ground, and that's where I had to do an integration, and of course, I didn't know what it was, but I had to integrate. And now I know that it has everything to do with integrating the soul or your true self within your body. And that's what started there. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I always knew that cats were legends. Okay, so that's the start of what was named a psychosis, but you recognized to be a transformation. Mm. So you were on the retreat, you did this these ancient rituals. And then what was the next step within that? What then happened to make it be seen as a psychosis?
Yeah, well, during the day I was relatively normal. How can anyone be normal?
But yes, what is normal?
What is normal? I did notice that I was breathing very heavily, and you know, I was feeling a bit lightheaded, but yeah, I managed around. And of course, the girl that was leading the retreat also checked me, and I was fine, and sometimes I had some grounding exercises, so it all went well. And when the retreat finished, I stayed a few days longer. But that's when, I think right after the retreat, during the night, I didn't sleep for one night, almost one night, because I, you know, my hands were taken over in all these kinds of healing movements. And it was also explained to me that I was starting to heal myself. I had some pain in the stomach, which is now gone, actually. I had it for years. And it all started. And there were voices, and it was getting very cozy in my head. There were many voices at a time. And that's when it started to get a bit freaky for me. And I started feeling a bit discomforted. Yeah. And that's also when, at this certain point, I knew that I had to leave the farm, because I would have stayed there for another week to hike, because Ibiza is beautiful and the wilderness here is, you know, it's so vast that I wanted to go in there. But after 2 days, my guidance said to me that you have to go now because you need to make space for whatever reason. But another voice said, you can't just go because you still have to say goodbye to the lady. That's not you, Eric. You don't just go away. So I felt a bit twisted. And I decided to stay for a bit longer. So I got my stuff together. And then the woman who organized the retreat, she came back. And then I wanted to say goodbye, but I started acting very strange. So I kept my sunglasses on and I said, I don't want to see your eyes because I don't want to check in with you because I need my distance right now. And she immediately noticed that I had gone very far, you know, that I have actually stepped out of being grounded in your body, being grounded in being. So she called my aunt. And then together, I really respected what they did afterwards because I'm a big guy, you know, and if I know where I want to go, I'm going there and nobody's going to stop me. So they've worked around me like 24/7. They've arranged everything because I got my stuff. I went into a car. I drove to the airport, you know, I made a small accident there, but not it's not mentionable. I talked to the police there. I thought that everybody was my friend, by the way. So I felt...
Everybody is your friend.
Really? It was like some code word, you know? So if I met people and I said, you're my friend, then I would know somehow that they would help me. It was very funny. I went to this hotel and my aunt kept calling me and she kept me with an open line. She gave me advice and that was very important, you know, because I was really drifting away. My mind was drifting away into another reality. And my aunt kept saying, okay, Eric, where are you right now? Get pen and paper, write down what day is it? What are you going to do next? Tomorrow morning, you're getting up. What are you going to do, you know? So she kept the line open. And in the meantime, the girl and a friend of her, they were arranging everything. They were bringing back my car. They were booking tickets. You know, they had the number of my aunt. So, yeah, they were everybody was really saving me. They were working very hard for me to be able to go back to Holland. Yeah, and I didn't know that by then because I was in the illusion that there was an army of light that was working to take me home and guide me to the light, and I had to escape from the darkness. That was what I was afraid of.
Maybe it's all one and the same, the army of light and the the beauty of humanity surrounding you and helping you get home. Wow. But you mentioned that you felt like you were going into a different reality. Can you explain a little bit about what that reality felt like to you?
If I break it down, because a lot of things happened, I was in the illusion that there was a difference between good and evil, so that the world has is divided in good and evil, and that we are working with a group of good people, you know, the white light, and that we are working hard to eradicate the evil from the world, and that we're already very far. It said like about 80% or something. I think they mentioned percentages.
May I just interrupt quickly? You said you were under the illusion that there was no good and evil in the world. Is that something you still feel is an illusion as part of the psychosis, or is that something you actually feel is a real reality or a higher reality as part of the transformation that you're feeling you went through?
I was in the illusion that there was a difference between good and evil, and this is maybe hard to explain because, you know, it's for us the same as we have a sun and a moon and a day and a night, but I now know it's my reality, you know, but I now know that there is no evil in this world because everything happens, you know, and there's no reason to be afraid of anything. And there is no army of light workers, but we're all together and we're just going into one direction, and the only thing we have to do is listen to each other and take care of each other and love each other, and we're going one way. So it might sound a bit vague, but for me that was the essence of the illusion I was in.
I guess with when we talk about there being no evil, I guess everything that is done to somebody has already been agreed. And I know this is a very difficult one for people to understand, especially when bad things, which we would define as evil, have been done. But when you get to the higher state of consciousness and that understanding there, we all kind of have these soul contracts. We're all one, and we all come here to live this life together in harmony or not, however you choose to look at that. But it is harmony because each soul needs to experience what it needs to experience, and it is all agreed before. And obviously there's some very violent and some very awful acts that come as part of that, but when you get to the higher understanding of that, it is Yeah, it's agreed. So therefore, is somebody being evil if you as a soul, before you come down to this life, have asked another soul to give you that experience, is it then evil that they have given you that experience? Just something to think about there, on the subject of you talking about there is no evil. But back to you and your experience.
Yeah, what should I tell? I mean, I got back to Holland and things, you know, I was dropped off the airplane. My sister, she actually took me in the car, and that was a wild ride because I now know that my third eye was being set there, literally. So my sister, and she doesn't know, and maybe she one day she'll listen to this podcast because I'm going to talk about her, but she's very wise and very strong, very balanced. I never expected I would say that about my little sister, but she was. Because we had a 1.5 hour drive from Eindhoven to Maastricht, and she sat next to me, obviously driving the car. And I sat there, and you know, something was taking over my breath, and I was breathing very deeply, and all the energy came from inside me, and literally... it came to an eruption in my head, and I felt like in the center of my eyes that all the energy was coming together and bursting out, you know. And my sister, she was next to me, and she kept me grounded there, you know. Her energy, her peace and quiet, although she was feeling very stressed, she told me later, but it kept me feeling safe, actually. So that's also the importance of family, I guess, you know. Yeah,
and it sounds like a very scary experience. In reality, you're talking about it. This is hindsight, of course. You already understand this is your third eye opening, and it sounds like it happened in a very violent and powerful way, which is obviously a lot to take.
Yeah.
But people's third eyes are opening all the time. We are all psychic. Every single one of us is born psychic. We all have the gift of sight. We talk about gut feelings in this, you know, in business and stuff. But in reality, our third eye is something that it's what we have that extra sense from.
Yeah.
As I say, like it's like my third eye. Sometimes I feel with my third eye that it's so open. I'm getting so many downloads of information. That it gives me a bloody headache frankly. So it can be very intense, but obviously for me it's still something that's I've had very intense experiences with it, but it's happened over a long period of time as well, whereas for you, you've just gone boom, out of nowhere, it's come straight at you. So it must have been a very, very terrifying experience for you.
Yeah, some elements were terrifying, but to be very honest, the voice was really comforting me all the time. So, and also giving me proof, because we were building on a relationship of trust, and every time it also said to me, this is going to happen right now. For example, tonight, when I was in Ibiza still, you're going to sleep in a good hotel, because that's what you need. You only have to ask for it. So that's what I did. I asked the taxi driver to bring me to a good hotel, you know, so that's how it works.
And then did you ask for the money for it as well?
It was 550 euros. It was the most expensive and shortest night of my life.
And Spirit didn't find a way of getting that money too, you know?
We still have to figure that out, I hope, for the future. It's been a big spender.
I'm still working on that one too.
I felt comforted in the beginning, and I knew what was happening, and I saw all this love between people. And for example, when I was in Maastricht with my aunt and uncle, I could see their bond, you know, they are soulmates. That was so clear for me. And their love and the balance between them as a couple constantly kept me grounded, kept me on earth. So I didn't feel scared at all. I knew that I was serving a purpose, you know, because for my aunt and uncle, actually saving me is valuable, you know. I mean, being able to save your nephew when he is losing reality is a gift, actually. And I knew that all the way, that it was not about me, but I was being an instrument for others as well as I was being guided myself, you know.
So back in Amsterdam, you actually found yourself in a position where you were sectioned.
That was straight from Maastricht, actually. Because when I stayed with my aunt and uncle during the night, I didn't fall asleep, and things started being a little bit blurry again. So I hit the streets. I remember first I danced in the living room of my aunt and uncle, and although, of course, they were a bit afraid, they were also laughing a lot. And then I went out and I took this big raincoat and this small hat on. I was some sort of Inspector Gadget, you know. I walked the street and I decided to sit in the back of a black van. Somehow it was open, because I was still in the illusion that this van would take me to safety, you know. And then I sat in the back of that van, but there was all this garbage and it was smelly. And then the voice said to me, Eric, you can do anything you want right now. Are you really going to sit on garbage? And then I said, no, that's a bad idea. So I went to sit in front, at the not the driver's seat, but the one right to it. And I sat for a while, and of course nothing happened. But then after half an hour or so, the driver came in, because it was just a worker and had his working van there open in the morning at 6 o'clock. And he was not that friendly to me, and I felt it immediately. So I left the car. And in the meanwhile, my aunt and uncle had called the police, of course, because I went on the streets, and they were also a bit frightened of me. But my uncle has told the police that I had been in special forces, that I had been deployed abroad. So yeah, I might have been, could have been aggressive and violent. So the police was a bit framed. And I knew that I wouldn't be violent, you know. I knew that I wouldn't hurt anyone, and I felt comfortable. But I felt the fear of the police, because I got out of the car. I walked towards 4 policemen and a police car, and they were scared. I mean, makes sense, you know, everybody is scared in that situation. So they asked me to turn around, and well, they weren't that clear to me, or I didn't receive their messages. I mean, let's leave that in the middle. But somehow I walked past by them, and then this voice, because we were having a lot of fun as well, this voice said to me, "Eric, do you see that bicycle over there?" So I looked at the bicycle and I said, "Yeah, I see it." "Okay. Have you ever thrown a bicycle at a police car?" I said, "Nah, you gotta be kidding me." And then he said, "Yeah, do you want to do it? I mean, you can do it right now." I said, "Yeah, why not? You know, it's harmless and I'm not gonna hurt somebody." So I said, "Okay, let's do it." And I took the bicycle and I threw it on the police car. And the next thing I heard, of course, was pepper spray. And they brought me to the ground, they pepper sprayed me, and they arrested me. All very friendly and very professional. I mean, I think the Dutch police has really done a good job there. I'm really proud, yeah.
I have to say, I mean, the voice in my head can be a little bit cheeky sometimes, but never to that extent. And if he ever guided me to getting pepper spray in my eyes, I think I'd be disconnecting with him very quickly.
Yeah, but for me it was fine, because, you know, I had all this training in the army, and I knew, you know, we also arrested people, or in training exercises arrested people. So I knew it was going to happen, and police was very, very comforting as well. And it was necessary, because of this event, I now know in hindsight, is they brought me to solitary confinement. And for me, that whole experience with solitary confinement and being there all by myself, not being able to go out, was a very, very important process of my healing, actually. Yeah.
And when you say solitary confinement, is this where you were sectioned, or is this a separate event?
Yeah, that's separate. So in Holland, they first... I was obviously not being aggressive, so I was being labeled as a care patient. But there is no institution that where you can be brought in at 6 o'clock in the morning. So they brought me to solitary confinement for a day. And then after, I was being checked by psychiatrists, of course, and they decided to bring me to... I was being sectioned for a few days.
Okay. Yeah. And so it was the speaking to the psychiatrist who decided to section you. They decided that the psychosis, as they would call it, was so strong that they felt the need to section you for that.
Yeah, definitely. That's what happened. And if you mind, I can tell something about the solitary confinement, because it was very, that was actually, I think that period was the most cleansing period of the whole, what we call psychosis. But... I was pepper sprayed in the eyes, and then constantly there were 3 words that were running through my head, and they were hope, love, and belief. Hope, love, belief. Hope, love, belief. All the time. And then I was being explained that, you know, we found out the importance of love as mankind. And we all hope that it's going to be fine. But truly believing is not something we all do. And then a voice started asking me while I was under the shower washing my eyes from the pepper spray, which was really burning by then, because I was completely naked standing there being watched by other people, you know, can you imagine, but my eyes burning like crazy. And then the voice said, "Okay, Eric, but do you believe?" And I said, in my head I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "No, do you believe it's going to be all right?" And I said, "I don't know, I mean, what do you mean? Do you believe?" I said, "Maybe." And he said, "Do you believe?" And I said, "I don't know." And then he said, "Okay, do you believe?" And then somehow I shouted out, "Yes, I believe." And I'm still not sure if it's been in my head or it's been, you know, if the police could have heard me. But when I shouted out, "Yes, I believe," I remember looking up and all the energy from my body was going up, and I saw through my eyes, I saw this warm, white, shiny light. And then all of a sudden I stepped out of the shower, opened my eyes, the pain was gone, and then I was locked up in solitary confinement. So, yeah.
Wow, that's quite a story.
Yeah, yeah.
So anything else you want to share from when you're in solitary confinement? That's, you know, having your rights taken away, right?
Yeah.
So how did that feel for you?
Yeah, somehow I realized that it made sense, you know. If you throw a bicycle in a police car, it makes sense that you're being locked up. So I didn't really struggle with that. What I did struggle with is that I was being afraid of being toxic, you know, like some medicine. Because one thing was really, really, really clear to me is I didn't want antipsychosis. I did accept some sleeping pills later on because I felt like my body needed rest. I mean, of course, it was very intense for my body. But I really, really didn't want antipsychosis. And I was so much focused on not taking that in because I intuitively knew that it was not good for me. Yeah,
yeah, that's really good. I'm so pleased that you felt that strongly about that, because I feel it is something for me. I just feel that there's so many people who go into this what we call psychosis, and get locked up and are given these drugs which stop them from feeling. And I know that as our society, we think that that's what we want to be doing, right? We want to stop them from feeling all this torture that they're feeling inside. But actually, and as you know for yourself, what started to happen is rather than it being a psychosis, it's the transformation, as you said, into something else. But it's a transformation into connecting with spirit, mm-hmm. to knowing that there's something bigger out mm-hmm. there than this reality that mm-hmm. we are actually in. And so, yeah, so if you were to take those psychotropic medication, you would probably you'd come more into this dense mm. reality that we're actually in, mm. but then be locked and trapped in your own body and your own mind, mm. not knowing what's going on. Mm. So I find it really, really scary, actually, that a lot of people in there probably are in this in this state of what I would say like a high state of probably a higher state of consciousness than most people in our society. And whilst yes, they probably can't function in our society because that's the way our society's been set up, I actually feel like they're probably actually very highly functioning mm-hmm. humans. Mm-hmm. And we're numbing them. These people who could bring, well, we'll get onto this with you in a second, because you're starting to bring these beautiful messages through, these messages of love, but these very powerful conscious mm-hmm. messages, and we're numbing people from mm-hmm. bringing that through. Mm-hmm. So I for one am very grateful that you followed that mm-hmm. instinct of yours to not, because it's only this happened 6 weeks ago, and you're back in Ibiza and you're sat here clear as day. There's so much clarity with you. There's nothing within you that makes me feel psychosis at all.
Yeah, not yet.
It's getting dark here, folks, and we're on our own. If you don't hear from me. It's magical that you're here so quickly after that event, when many people mm-hmm. people taking this medication mm-hmm. are trapped either being sectioned, so they're trapped being locked up, or they're trapped in their own mental state for very, very long periods of time.
Yeah.
And here you are 6 weeks later. Yeah. So if nothing else, congratulations for that.
Yeah. Of course I could say thank you, but it's not been my decision or even my effort, you know. I mean, I've been prepared for this, I think, in past lives. I mean, I'm not really sure how reincarnation works yet, but I do know that it exists.
It certainly does.
Yeah, and I've been struggling. To be honest, I've been struggling more the last 5 or 6 years with what I wanted to do in life than this whole intense transformation, because I was being guided so clearly. Of course, I had my fears. I mean, I had to go through all my fears in order to be where I am right now. I can say that I truly don't have any fears anymore, although my body still has to adapt to this new situation, that's for sure. So I would like to say thank you, but thank you is not in place, actually, because it just... You know, it happens. You don't choose for this.
Yeah. It just is.
Yeah.
I'd actually really like to read something that I found on the internet on psychosis, just what the meaning of psychosis actually is. So it's saying that most people think of psychosis as a break with reality. In a way, it is. Psychosis is characterized as disruptions to a person's thoughts and perceptions that make it difficult for them to recognize what is real and what isn't. These disruptions are often experienced as seeing, hearing, mm-hmm. and believing things that aren't real, or having strange persistent thoughts, behaviours, and emotions. Whilst everyone's experience is different, most people say psychosis is frightening and confusing. Mm-hmm. And it also actually says there that in America, it's approximately 100,000 young people a year experience psychosis. Mm-hmm. And just going back to what I was saying there, so we're talking about this break in reality. This is what we diagnose psychosis as, a break in reality. But what reality is it that we're talking about? Because we have this reality that we know of here.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe we just need to open up to the reality of a different reality. I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Because obviously now you've opened up to this different reality. It's a reality I've been open to for some time and had to be opened up to in my own way as well, which was also scary at times. So I didn't suffer what I would call psychosis, but I certainly had a lot of experiences growing up before the internet was really around as well, so I couldn't look anything up and had these very terrifying experiences. I had no one to talk to, I didn't know what they were, and I didn't know what was happening to me. I was frightened. But I often feel like if I had actually opened up and spoken to somebody, I'm so grateful that I didn't speak to anybody, because if I had, I'd have definitely been sent to a psychiatrist. And if I'd have spoken to a psychiatrist, I'd have definitely been down the same route that you are. They'd have locked me up and thrown away the key, some of the crazy experiences I was having. And, you know, I know it's easy for me to say this, but I know I'm a long way from being crazy. A little bit weird maybe at times. but But I'm a long way from being crazy. In fact, you know, I'd say I'm one of the most sane people that most people know. And most of my friends, whilst they do express that, of course, yes, I'm a little bit weird in the reality that we live in, they definitely recognize me and know me as being someone who is very sane. So obviously you're going through this yourself at the moment, and it is so new to you as well. Like, I'm 7 years into this, and for you it's six weeks and you already seem just so on the ball with it. You already seem to know you know where you're going with this. What's your thoughts on this this reality, really?
Well, first I'd like to mention that I listened to Deepak Chopra's healing CD for now, and I don't want to make any advertisement, but it's so good, because one of the things he says about reality is, you know, hallucinations become reality if experienced by many, and that's the essence of the shift we are making right now. And I'm very grateful that I'm meeting all these people like you who have same experiences. Somehow there are many of them in Ibiza. And I'm also grateful for my friends back at home who didn't have these experiences so explicitly, because everybody plays his part in everybody's life. But for me, finding understanding and being acknowledged as a person, and that my reality is not my own, but we're actually sharing this reality with many more people, that gives me real support as well. That helps me a lot.
That's really good to know. And what do you think, so these poor people who are currently suffering inside these mental hospitals, who probably at this stage, once they're on the medicine, they probably are really far gone to try and get back from that place, but what are your thoughts on how we as a society can help these people? Obviously we need to raise our own consciousness and our understanding and have more compassion for these people, and from my perspective, I think try and use medication as a last resort rather than a first, which it's not just psychotropic medication that's used as a first resort. We walk into a doctor's and they're writing a prescription for pharmaceuticals the second we walk in the door, right? There's a massive shift that needs to happen there in terms of working with mind, body and spirit. But having been in that environment yourself and having met some of these people, and it'd be great if you can maybe share some of your experiences when you were sectioned, what are your thoughts on the use of medicine or how else we could work with these people?
This is not my personal opinion, of course, because everything I say has been given. But I know now in this wave of awakenings that there are people capable of bringing people that are in psychosis to integrate them. And by integrating, I mean that they are confused. So their body has fears and their soul has fears maybe. and it's possible to integrate them without medicine, and that'll take sometimes a single individual, an energy worker. Sometimes it will take teams of energy workers, sometimes it will go very fast, and sometimes it will take more time. And what is also very important is that the system of that person gets involved. So, I mean, it could be a partner. We always think that, you know, parents and a love partner are the most important pillars in somebody's life. But I mentioned my sister before. I mean, we were arguing all the time the last few years, but she was one of the people that could actually bring me down and bring me back and keep me where I needed to be. And it wasn't my parents that took care of me. Well, they took care of me, of course. I don't want to discredit them, but I wanted to go to my aunt because she was somebody in my environment that I would intuitively know could bring me back. And I now know, and that's, I mean, we all have our gifts, that it's really possible to integrate people with their souls who are maybe have been in psychosis for many years. Yeah, and we're finding that out right now. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I really look forward to the day when we, as a society, we sort of step up and start to recognise this. And it is happening, like consciousness is really shifting at the moment and people are becoming more and more aware. But yeah, I think this is a really powerful one because, you know, these people are truly trapped. And and as I say, if what we're saying is correct, and, you know, there's two of us saying it, so it must be true. Exactly. But, you know, if what we're saying is correct and these people are highly functioning, highly conscious beings who just have these beautiful gifts and have these spirit connections that they just simply don't understand, and they can't understand because our society doesn't support that understanding, then that's a real shame. Because I know for me, being connected with spirit, some of the beautiful messages that come through me that blow me away sometimes, I can't believe that these messages have come through me. And obviously this is what you're experiencing yourself. I know as well that obviously we had this chanced meeting at Tanit Cave, and obviously, as we both know, there's no such thing as coincidence. And as I mentioned in the introduction there, as I was talking about channeling, you were actually around the corner, just meters away, channeling. I believe, was this your first channeled experience where you recorded something?
Well, yeah, before I mean, what's a channeling? Every thought can be a channeling in the end, but this was the first time that, let's call it a spirit guide, really emphasized the need to make this, to record this. So I sat down, and of course I didn't know what was going to happen, because that's what happens all the time, and I don't know what's going to happen. But I trusted, you know, so I put it on a recorder, and that was the first time, actually, that the spirit guide, my spirit guide, introduced himself. And people have their own spirit guides or conceptualizations of spirit guides. Let's leave language in the middle, that's not important for me. And it was my calling. So I knew that I had to be in Ibiza, I knew that I had to meet somebody, well, maybe it's you, I don't know.
Here I am.
It's my last day, so it has to be you. and also to find my true calling. So that's what happened. And it was only like 10 minutes. And you know, if you listen back, it's very, very strange, because you make all these strange sounds and your voice doesn't really sound like your voice. But for me, it's very, 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 I'm very grateful that I'm going back home confident to know what I should do, because it's not about me anymore, but it's about giving, you know, it's about giving back and maybe helping people that are in a psychosis right now how to get back, because, you know, I've been there, I know, I know how it works, to be honest.
And I'd love to ask you, actually, how did you get back? Like, you were sectioned, what happened? How did you end up getting out of that situation? Yeah. And how did you get back to this place of, like, clarity and strength?
I think that the first thing that was the most important thing is that you have to work with your fears, because something is holding you back. I mean, the soul wants to go its direction, you know. The soul knows where to go, but the body has insecurities or fears, and somehow you have to work on that. And I was very lucky that, you know, it happened for me, or maybe people worked on that, or source worked on that in past lives, I can't tell. So I think that's very important, and I don't know exactly how to do that yet, because, you know, I mean, it's been 6 weeks ago, give me some time. But that's very important. When I was being sectioned, of course I was with people who were also a bit, let's say, disillusioned, let's keep it like that. And I was very open to all energy fields, so I could see and feel everybody, and I knew I literally felt that I was buzzing of energy. You know, I was one big energy beacon. And what happened there is that for me, I was constantly evading the energy of others, because other people at a soul level, actually at an energetic level, they were curious what was going on. So they were coming to me and I was coming to them, but I couldn't handle it that well. So what happened then, and that was actually very interesting, that every time I met somebody, we were checking in with each other at an energetic level. Soul level, whatever name you want to give it, but let's say an energetic level. So I remember meeting this woman, and she was completely disillusioned, walking across the hallway, not eating, not sitting between other people, you know, other guests. And then we started talking, and we made a connection, and she was constantly talking about that she wanted to die, and she had a gun in her room, which I got scared of. Strangely, because I thought I lost my fears, but still.
Guns are pretty scary.
Pretty scary. But somehow we checked in with each other's fears and insecurities, I think. And after a while, there was trust, you know, and I could see her eyes change, literally her eyes change, because her eyes were very much going from the left to the right, and she was constantly evading my eyes. And then finally, when we got really checked in with each other at an energetic level, she stared me straight into the eyes, and I saw these black eyes like Cleopatra, you know, like powerful and strong and wise.
That's Cleopatra for anyone who's English.
sorry to all the English listeners. Cleopatra. Sorry, I'll do my best. So then something very interesting started afterwards, because this was not the only example. I had these kind of energetic check-ins with more people individually. But from the moment that trust was built, they started aiding me in clearing the energy field for me as well. So other people were coming in. They, for example, wanted to talk with me, came sit next to me. And then this woman, which from now on I will call Cleopatra, literally took over the conversation, distracted the other person, and cleared the energy field so that I could sit there in comfort.
So you feel like she was doing this, you don't think this was a conscious thing that she was doing to protect you, you feel it was just on that soul level of understanding, it was something that was just naturally happening within her to protect you.
I think this is the essence of why people are together, you know? I mean, we are constantly working on our harmony together and our balance, and the things we say are usually not even the things that truly matter, you know? I mean, energetically, there's a lot going on. You can sit next to your love partner and not say anything and feel completely in love and balanced. And the things that I've seen and learned during and felt during that period in that when I was sectioned, for me are very valuable for my future work. Because can you imagine any time that you meet a friend and you haven't seen him or her for a while, you always have these first 5 minutes of awkwardness, you know, that you have to get used to each other a little bit. That's the energy working. And if you are really open, and I think many people are open to this, but we sometimes cannot find the language to say what we're actually feeling, it can help couples, it can help friends, it can help in a work environment, management teams or teams or whatsoever, to really make good harmony in the team again, to feel the energy and to build trust, actually, because it's all about trusting each other and seeing each other for who you really are and what you really need. Yeah.
Exactly. And we still haven't got to how you managed to get out of the sectioning situation. Oh, yeah. But I have another question though, because I'd love to know, you've spoken about your future work. And obviously these voices in the head that, you know, people, there may be listeners out there who do still think you're psychotic. Yeah. And there'll be listeners out there who just think I took too many drugs and that's how I connected with my spirit guide. And obviously that's fine. We're not here to convince anyone any different. We're just for anyone who's open and wanting to, you know, maybe wanting some information. We're just here to share our stories, really. But with that in mind, you know, we recognise these voices. And I say, like, I want to clarify when we say voices, because people do automatically think the voices in your head, crazy people.
Yeah.
But actually, it's a guidance. It's being connected to our spirit guides, which, by the way, every single one of us has, and all of our guides are trying to get through to us all the time. We're just too blind to see it a lot of the time. And I think maybe, you know, in your own example, what happened to you was quite intense, but sometimes spirit are trying so hard to get through and we're just not listening, that maybe sometimes they get a little bit overzealous with their approach maybe. But so as I say, like, think we're crazy or don't, but you know, I would love to see people opening up to their to their guides and recognizing that spirit's there all the time, and not just their guides but their loved ones that have passed away as well. But that's a whole other episode, I guess. But yeah, what I'd like to ask you, so these the spirit guides that are coming through to you, they're being quite clear with you, aren't they, as to what it is that you're meant to be doing here. So you've spoken about your future role, and so just tell us a little bit about what it is these crazy voices want you to do.
Well, yeah, these crazy voices are luckily down to one by now, and I'll call it my own voice, my own guiding voice, or my inner voice. But it all makes sense, because, you know, I was drawn to this leadership thing from a very young age, and not because I was ego hungry or like power hungry, but because I loved serving people when things get really tough, you know. And in my opinion, leadership is an art, you know, to be able to facilitate a group of people to outperform things that they have never imagined doing is really an art. So that's what I like about it, like, practically. But if you look about the whole shift that we're making in consciousness, there are many big companies that are still organized in a very traditional way, you know, corporate environments, consultancy companies, I mean, many companies. And there is also a strength in the system that if the leader has a clear vision and listens to his true voice, you know, and follows his, like, good values. There is no good and evil, but you know what I mean? Good values of love and harmony and freedom for everybody. It's actually possible to change a big system using the old traditional methods, you know. I mean, I've been in the army. I know how powerful a system can be in achieving something beautiful. So that's why I would really like to offer my services to management teams that are under pressure, where our leaders are struggling with themselves, you know, in order to contribute my little part in this whole big shift, you know. That's what I, that's what I'm going to do.
And when you say offering your services, do you mean you would be channeling information for them? What exactly do you mean by your services?
No, I'm not quite sure how it's all going to work out, but my guidance for now is very clear that, you know, we have two legs, and one leg is actually working on energy, but the other leg is really standing here. So I'm going to do a team coach course. I've already had some experiences, but I want to make it a bit extra what I know. And no, I don't know how my energy work is going to work out. I do know that I've been given my senses are very high. So I know what to feel. Well, that's a bit strange. I feel what I feel, but I know what to say, when to shut up, and when to ask the right questions in order for that person or that team to come through the difficulties that they are facing, which could also mean that somebody in a team or a management team chooses to go another way, or maybe that the leader of the team chooses to go another way. And that's difficult, you know. That's a very difficult thing, because it has to do with fear again. And that's a surface that, balancing on like energy work, but also being very grounded, that's something I am allowed to do in this life. Yeah, and I'm very grateful for that. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I know I've already said this, but it's great that after only 6 weeks you have so much clarity on where it is that you want to go with this. And obviously things are going to unfold slowly over time. I mean, as I say, I've been consciously working with spirit for 7 years now. I mean, unconsciously probably most of my life, but consciously knowing, you know, that this path is unfolding for me. And it amazes me all the time how many just new avenues open, things that you didn't even recognize were going to be there. And so for you, for only 6 weeks in, to already have a clear picture. I mean, obviously you know yourself that it's not everything, you don't know everything yet, but you've got this really clear picture. And I guess something I want to add to that really is, you know, we joked earlier about, you know, the crazy voices in our head, but you know, we're both of us here, are the work that we're talking about doing is powerful work that is looking to change things with love.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes me laugh really when people point fingers and suggest that, you know, you're nuts when actually, like, if we're working in love, like, I'd rather be in the crazy world that we're living in our crazy reality than the craziness of the physical reality that we are actually sat here in today, you know. So yeah, but yeah, it was a lovely meeting that we had, a lovely I say not by chance meeting that we had at Tannet Cave there. Yeah. And I'm really obviously really grateful that both of our spirit guides brought us together. I think I'm going to need to sort of close quite soon, but I would still love to hear how you got out of the section. We're going to get this out of you if it kills me.
Yeah. Well, it was actually very easy because luckily, since I had all these experiences in the army, and it's always about the basics, specifically in special forces. I mean, special forces aren't that special at all. They're just very good at the basics, taking care of yourself, you know, sleeping, eating, and all those things, taking care of your body. So when I was in, I was sectioned, my guidance started saying, okay, Eric, look in the mirror. How do you look right now? Yeah, I look a bit like Jack Nicholson in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Okay, shave yourself, you know, get yourself together, do some sports, get a pen and paper. What's this day going to be like? Just, you know, what happened the last few days? Write it down, you know. You have to prepare yourself because tomorrow you'll be in a conversation with the psychiatrist. You have to be prepared, you know. So, yeah, how I got out was literally by guidance of my voice as well. So that's what I'm saying. It wasn't mine. I was helped, yeah.
So your cheeky little spirit guide, he got you into that mess, but he got you straight out of it yeah. after, which is great, yeah.
This was a hit and run operation.
But obviously, you know, a very powerful experience, and I'm a big believer in, you know, everything does happen for a reason, and particularly when it's big experiences like this. So it seems, you know, you were meant to go through that. You were meant to have that experience. You were meant to be there. I'm sure there's, you know, part of the experiences that you had with some of the people who are currently still trapped there will probably play a very powerful role in your path going forward as
Definitely.
Well. So I'm a big believer in always having gratitude for every experience, no matter how hard it is. And I know that can be hard for some people to swallow sometimes. But I think when you have gratitude for a situation, you're able to walk away with it with so much learning. Mm. Yeah, it's just it becomes a powerful experience rather than that experience that tainted me or that experience that broke me.
Yeah.
It actually becomes something that experience that might have broke me, but boy, did it build me back up again.
Yeah.
So I'm very glad to see you sat here at the top of this tower. I was going to say being built back up. How tall are you actually?
194.
What's that in them? 6 foot. 8.
Yeah, I guess so.
He's probably the tallest man I've ever seen, so he's definitely built himself back up. But anyway, thank you so much for joining me here. It's, you know, it's a very personal story that you've shared, and a very difficult one. Mm. I mean, when we talk about psychosis, we know it's a transformation, but psychosis, that's something that's huge, and you've been through that, and you're here sharing it with me and my listeners today. So I have a lot of gratitude for that, and I really hope that anyone listening can just take something from what we've spoken about here today. You know, I've met so many people since I've become very open about my own connection with spirit. I have so many people who now turn around to me and say, oh, actually, I've had this experience and I've had that experience. And people are too shy to talk about it, as was I for a long time, because we really worry about the negative connotations that come back. But, you know, if there's all these people having these experiences, it's got to be real, right? I mean, we know that, but, you know, just to put that out to other people. So I just really hope that people can take something on board for this and maybe start to be a little bit receptive to their own experiences and a little bit more open-minded to their own experiences. And I'd also say, like, this is more for us as a society, to be less judgmental to people's potential psychosis, people's, like, you know, psychotic episodes, if that's what it is, because actually, you know, there's potentially a lot more at play than what we judge or perceive it to be. But anyway, it's got very dark here, and as I mentioned earlier, I've been left with a nutter, so I think we're going to leave it there. But
it's another who knows how to survive in the wilderness, so you'll be fine.
And we are literally in the middle of nowhere, so I do need a nutter who's able to survive in the wilderness, because I certainly wouldn't know. But please do tune in next time for I'm going to have more interesting guests and be at more beautiful locations across this amazing magnetic island of Ibiza. So join in next time. Take care.